Yes, guys, what's good? You're tuning into Mango Masala. My name's Gaines. I'm here with Halima.
Hi, everyone.
Why was the first term that came to my head fresh off the boat?
Fresh
off the plane.
Is that what you think of me? I am a bit fresh. I'm not going to lie. I say to people, like, I do have very... not okay, freshy is like a bit of a contentious term, but I do have very freshy tendencies sometimes. I'll be honest. I'm not offended by it.
Fresh off the plane, I'm going to go with that.
I am fresh off the plane. I came out earlier this week.
How was your trip?
It was actually really nice. It was nice. I went to Tunisia. It is quite similar vibes to like Morocco culturally, but the people are so nice. I mean, people were nice in Morocco as well, but the people were especially nice in Tunisia. Did like a little road trip. Had my birthday.
I mean, in my head, I'm trying to come up with how can I make a joke about this without also being triggering offensive or triggering yeah. you. So I decided maybe to go against it. But right. there's an age gap here now. Really?
Shut the heck. Carlos, you got a month. You got less than a month. Shut up.
Next year, I'm going to make a bigger deal out of it. You're in a whole different decade.
Stop it. Don't remind me of that. I feel like since we've been on this show, because like I was 24 when we started. So the first birthday that I had on the show was 25. And that's when I started getting like the aging scaries at 25. So I feel like every single year, like I've never had a positive response to a birthday on this show ever.
I feel like that's so funny because that's what I just presume that's just what you're like. But is it just because of
it's genuinely age, 25. Yeah. Like before 25, like I'm such a birthday freak. Like I love celebrating my birthday. And I think the first time I started to get the sense of like, oh, I'm like getting older was when I was 22, because I feel like up until 21, that's still like uni age and like you're still really young. And then 22 was like past the first kind of big adult milestone and you're kind of like, oh wait, this is the start of like your young adult life. And then from then, but then 23, 24 were like fine. 25, I cried for like 2 weeks. 26, 27, 28, I freaked the fuck, I swear, I freaked the fuck out. 29, again, freaked the fuck out. 29 is like, I'm not even celebrating being 29. I am just in trepidation is the word about turning 30.
You know, you're the first.
Nearly 30?
No, but also you're the first. Obviously, I know people who've been 29, but you're the first person of a year group that I'm seeing in person being 29. You don't look 29.
Oh, shut up, Carlos. Shut up.
No.
See, this is the conundrum, right? Because it's like, I know, and I say this all the time, but like, I know my feelings about being 29 are very like socially enforced. Like, it is not like you just wake up one day and it's not any different to what it was the day before. But also like, 29. It's because mentally I think mentally I feel like 21, I'll be honest.
I'm about 21.
I think, you know what they say? Apparently if you have ADHD, your frontal lobe doesn't develop till much later on. Oh, I genuinely believe
25
that.
25 extension.
Have you ever felt this? Like, you know, people talk about their frontal lobe developing. A lot of people talk about it feeling like a switch. Like, they woke up one day or there was one instance where they handled a bit differently and they're like, oh, shit, my frontal lobe has developed. Like, I felt that. I've never had that feeling.
Definitely not a switch. I'd say there's been change, but I mean, I'm all for it. If there is scope for it to still be developing, I'll take it. Like, I could use a bit more personal growth, like from that, but yeah.
Anyways, I'm nearly 30, guys, and I am kind of, I don't know, I'm trying to like be happy about it because aging is a privilege, you know. Not everyone gets to do it. If this was like a century ago, I'd be like halfway through my life.
Also, again, we don't know, like, touch wood, but like, you never know.
God forbid, but I might be like, you actually never know. So yeah, you should take every day like a blessing, to be fair. I am, alhamdulillah, I'm alive. Yeah, I'm alive.
Alive in 29.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
Listen to Demi Lovato song?
No, you sent it to me. That was Carlos's birthday message to me. He just sent me that Demi Lovato.
We discussed it before you went, and then I was like, right, well. I'll
listen to it afterwards. I'll listen to it on my drive after I leave.
Yeah.
You know what it is? It's like that. It's the divergence between when you're younger and how you perceive these ages versus when you're actually here you're that age and you're like, well, I still like.
This is what it is. Like, I'm looking at you now and it's like 29. What What?
How?
I'm pretty sure, like my auntie's mum, for example, had her first child, like, early 20s, but my mum was 29 when she had me, and I'm just like...
My mother had three kids by my age.
Yeah, as is the case for a lot of, like, South Asian
like,
women,
what
yeah.
the fuck, like...
Back in the day.
And me, I still feel like an actual... I feel like a complete child. Like, I genuinely do, like... Yeah, interesting. It's very hard to reconcile, like... kind of the social idea of what 29 is versus how you personally internalise that.
But then it is also mad because you'll see pictures of people, like, say, in the 80s or the 90s that were, like, in their 30s, and then you'll see people that are in their 30s now. And the people now, I'm sure it's not just our perception of it. They look younger.
They look younger.
So I don't know what's changed.
It's true, because you would watch, you know, like, these early noughties, like, TV shows.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's like someone, and you're looking at them like, oh, this is a 40-year-old, and they're like, no, they're like 20. I don't know. Well, I mean, I'm glad. How old do I look? If you didn't know me, how old do you think I look?
I think mid-20s.
Rona, if you didn't know me, how old would you think I look? 28. Why? Are you lying? What do you think?
No, I think mid-20s is fine. Like what? Like 25 Wait. To 27.
All right, I'll take it.
Yeah. Also, I love how we've got like an ask the audience today.
Yeah, we've got an ask the audience today, guys. I needed a bit of reassurance.
Did you get it?
Mildly. I mean, they were both younger than 29, but...
Yeah, but I think that's the thing. Like, 29 just sounds older than it is. Anyway, I feel like we've focused on this.
Right, moving on. This is what I mean. You don't give me the floor about my age. I'll just go on and on and on about it.
You know what I think it is? I feel like I'm just trying to... create some kind of positivity before we delve into this week, but I feel like I'm just failing to come up with stuff.
Shall I tell you something positive?
Yeah, yesterday please do.
I got into the car yesterday and Verona was like, oh, I got your present for your birthday. I was like, what? She's got me like this lip balm and it was mango flavor. And she goes, I got it you for mango masala.
Very nice. Oh,
This girl knows ball.
Next step is to get a chili one.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've been speaking about the past couple of weeks how... there's been rising anti-immigrant, xenophobic, racist sentiment throughout the UK. And I think as well...
I noticed the flags in your estate. There was one flag there.
Yeah. Which mysteriously came out. Like,
around the same week.
Yeah, I was like...
Yeah, literally, like, I've been talking about it. And it's like, I've noticed a lot of people that I went to, like, high school with are coming out and, like... fucking writing these statuses,
really
showing support for these protests, and I'm like, oh my god, like, you're fucking, no one is safe, like, yeah. And it goes to show, like, these people who are, like, I think sometimes you look at these people and you're like, oh, they're very clearly like the enemy, and they're very clearly on like the opposite team and in opposition to us, and actually they're not. It's people that you like, it's your colleagues, it's your schoolmates, it's people, your neighbours, you know?
I was thinking this when I was in the gym yesterday, and I was kind of like thinking like this.
Looking around.
No, there was like, there's so many people here. I wonder like what all these people actually think. Like, it is very much, and I think especially with social media, it's so easy to feel like an echo chamber.
Right, 100%, 100%. Yeah. And then you see like how prolific actually a lot of these like sentiments are, and you're like, fucking hell, like.
One video that's been particularly mad, I don't know if you've seen it, it was at the protest last weekend, and it was, I think it was a black man, went up to someone, I think they're actually Moroccan, but they went up, they saw their mate, literally, on the opposing side of this protest, like, doing Tommy Robinson chants, and they were literally, they confronted them, and you can see the friend was, like, actually so embarrassed. They were literally like, what are you doing? And I think they were chanting NF, like National Front. Like,
but I think that's what's like really sinister and insidious about it, because like I said, like I think we have this idea that, oh, if we saw them in the street we'd recognise them, right? Like, they'd look a certain way, they'd act a certain way, they'd say certain things, and it's like it's at a point now where it's so like deeply entrenched into British society that it's not just these, you know, the stereotypical kind of EDL members, it is kind of everyday people who are like consuming and regurgitating this rhetoric, and it can be your colleagues, it can be your friends, it can be your neighbors. Like,
I think that's the scary thing, is that they don't even necessarily regurgitate it unless prompted, because there's so many people out there that will have been thinking this whole time, and it's only now that people are coming out on the streets and are making it very clear what they think, that they feel actually comfortable to say, you know what, I agree with that. Right. I think that as well.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that's why, like, at the start when I was saying, oh, we've seen a rise in sentiment, I think it's important to, that's not a case of, oh, it's, people have started thinking this. It's a case of people have always thought this. It, yeah. It's just they're now feeling more comfortable. Emboldened. Yeah.
I mean, I do think that's true. I also do think that there will be some people who have been radicalized. I do think there'll be some people who perhaps were, you know, not that way inclined. And then sure. because of how kind of, I always, like I said, I always put it down to kind of like the financial precarity and like, you know, the fact that people are facing increasing financial crises. I do think as that experience is becoming more and more prevalent, so is people kind of adopting certain ideas and beliefs.
I mean, going back to as well to people feeling emboldened and actually feeling like taking to the streets and making it very clear how they feel. Unfortunately, over the past couple of weeks, we've seen a number of violent attacks on people of colour across the country. I mean, you sent me a couple of these. Near London, there was a Bengali man and his mother that were attacked with a baseball bat. A white man was mocking the mother's hijab, and I think there's been some reports that he was pulling it as well. The son then confronted the man and was hit repeatedly with a baseball bat. There's literally a video of that as well, which, again, with these things, it's always like, you're glad that there's video evidence, but then also you're like, why is it that we have to actually create tangible evidence, of like, ultimately, non-white people's pain. Yeah. Near Bristol as well, there was a 9-year-old girl that was shot with an air gun, the perpetrator being a white man, guessing around 17 to 18 years old. And whilst he did that, he was chanting racist abuse at her. Thankfully, she is not injured, but she is apparently really frightened to go outside now. It's a horrible thing. Like
a baby.
Yeah, literally.
Literally a baby.
And I know, obviously, 17 to 18-year-old isn't that old either, but it's kind of like, come on, like, what could possess you?
It's a lot older than 9.
Yeah, and what could possess you to, like, think, oh, there's an obviously young child there. I'm going to do this. That, and I think probably the most prolific case that I've seen over the past couple of weeks has been what happened near Birmingham in Oldbury, where a Sikh woman in her 20s was attacked and raped by 2 white men. And during the ordeal, they actually told her, you don't belong in this country, get out.
That is so, like, it's so, I mean, firstly, yeah, like, talking about this is so fucked up, because it's, these are like ordinary, unassuming citizens. These are not, like, you have no proof that this person, because obviously the basis of this protest and the basis of this like whole political movement is that you believe that migrants are desecrating your national culture, they are sponging off of your resources, like they are bad, right? And there's absolutely no proof that you have by looking at someone that they are doing that. There's no proof that you have looking at someone to know that they're not a legal British citizen, that they haven't been born here, that they don't have a high tax paying job, that they're not well educated, like all of the metrics that they're kind of they're using to villainize migrants, right? And yet you are going to attack them on that basis anyway, and that is why we say it's racism, because like you have no reason to have anything against that person other than what they look like, other than the color of their skin. It is as rudimentary as that. There is nothing else. You haven't interacted, these are strangers to you, right? And in that regard, like anyone can get it. Anyone, like, no one is safe. That's firstly. Secondly, this case about the Sikh woman in Oldbury, it's so harrowing, right? Because it kind of reveals the really, like, sick, perverted nature of these, like, political movements, where it's like, on the one hand, what you're saying to everyone is that you're, like, disgusted and repulsed by these people, and, like, it's a legitimate, dignified political stance, and it's to do with national pride and national culture and economics and resources and all of these things. And yet within that you are committing kind of like one of the most heinous like crimes, like one of the most heinous acts that you can commit as a human being, you know. And it is like really, really sexually perverted, like it's a sexualized thing, and it's like it doesn't add up. If this is a dignified stance that you're taking, you know, about, like I said, national culture and economics, if truly you are repulsed and disgusted by these people, like, how do you then lead yourself to doing that?
Yeah. Even if they do genuinely believe that, how are they then going and doing, right, like you say, what is ultimately the most horrific thing? And like
that, from the perpetrator side, right, I don't want to kind of go too much into this, trigger warning, sexual violence, like I don't want to go too much into it, but from the perpetrator side, it's not, I don't believe they're doing that to enact a punishment. It's not the same as like beating someone with a baseball bat or, you know, shooting someone. That for them is sexual pleasure. Like, you are getting sexual pleasure from someone who you have said is your enemy. Like, it's such a fucking odd dynamic.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, it's very much like a power thing, right?
Right.
Like, when they're doing it, saying that.
Yeah. Like, yeah, and it's like, it's so primitive. Like, it is like, you are, that is like such base impulse that you are like being controlled by. Like, you are taking this this like moral high ground in all of this, right? Like, you are like I said, presenting your stance and your political movements and beliefs as being this like very dignified position, and yet you are acting in the way that you are. Like, you, it's a, you're a disgrace, and therefore, like, the reasons that you're doing this, i.e. this political belief, that's a disgrace. And it just goes to show, it's not about politics. It's literally just, it's just an example for people to be able to just fucking behave badly. Like, it's just, it is on the large part, I would say, a load of people with criminal impulse being allowed to engage in criminal activity, because the amount of violence that you see coming out of these protests, it has to be, it's just, it's crazy. And it doesn't have to go as far as, you know, physically beating someone, making them bleed, or, you know, raping someone. I've even seen that, you know, they're chasing, like, if they see an ethnic person.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen, I've seen them chase, have you seen that example of them chasing that white man? Like, there was one white man who was giving an interview where he was like, he lived in a local area, and he was like, oh, these protests, they're just disturbing me. Like, they're disturbing everyday life of the residents here. And then they were like, oh, he doesn't even live here. He's a rat. And then they started chasing him.
No, I haven't seen that one. I did see one of them chasing them. It's that brown girl. Yeah.
But that's my point. Yeah. Like, there's so much video evidence of them just being fucking hooligans. And it's like, how can you say this is a dignified political movement? Look at how you guys are behaving.
As it literally, before you even get into what are you actually fighting for,
right,
at the end of the day.
Right, exactly. Because if really what this is about is like resources and national culture and et cetera, why the fuck are you not lobbying your government? What have you done? Tell me one thing you have done to lobby your government other than come out and be racist. I just can't believe anyone's who's taken it seriously.
Well, this is the thing as well. Obviously, all these attacks have been taking place simultaneously whilst these protests are taking place. Most of them disguised with the guise of national pride, but ultimately the message is one of nationalism.
Right.
Realistically, if we're going to be frank about
racism, xenophobia,
of the above. And I think the thing that's so disturbing is when you were just saying before about, oh, how can anyone actually think this? Last weekend, this protest rally, whatever you want to call it, that took place in London, saw at least 110,000 people take part, which is thought to be the largest nationalist event in decades in the UK. I think as well, it just comes down to, it's like, look, like, this event is literally, the one on Saturday was literally organised by Tommy Robinson. Can I just say,
that man, let him get to the afterlife. He will have a lot to answer for. That's all I'm saying.
I still don't understand how he's still causing havoc, because I swear
he's a fugitive. He's a wanted criminal. Like, how is he? It just, again, like, there's so much, like, cognitive dissonance in everything, right? Like, you guys are presenting this to be a rightful, justified, dignified movement, and yet the kind of one of the primary leaders of this movement is a fucking criminal. Like, there's so much cognitive dissonance, and then they'll blame the migrants.
The thing that's worrying is that this doesn't seem to be stopping, right? It seems like it's getting worse and worse. Not to try and compare racist protests. But like, if we are looking at last year, that was a horrific couple of weeks in August, and then things kind of died down a bit. Yes, like we're saying, the sentiment is still, it's always there.
But the action, yeah.
Yeah, people stopped.
Organized action, it didn't last very long.
Yet now, and I don't know whether it's because what's happening now is under the guise largely of like, oh, we're protesting, we're taking to the streets, as opposed to actual rioting. But it just seems to be just, it's not stopping. And I've seen polarizing opinion online, to be honest. I've seen a number of people that have been saying, we do not owe any grace to the far right or the people that are partaking in these protests. We don't need to engage with them. Like, we don't owe them anything. And I've seen a lot of other people that have been coming forward and saying, actually, I think the only way that we're going to get out of this or get to a better place is by actually speaking to these people that are taking part, understanding why are they taking part, offering them basically education, actually, on how a lot of their reasonings and ideas are actually flawed, and that constructive communication is the only way that we're really going to get anywhere. So I wanted to know what your opinion
on this. I have had very, like, this is something that I've been thinking about actually for years, right? I think about, obviously, as like a Marxist, I think about kind of a global, like, socialist revolution, right? And I think about something like this as being part of that, or this through that kind of like lens. And I have a friend, another Marxist friend, and me and her have always had this conversation, this debate of kind of ideological purity versus like pragmatism. I think very early on, I was always kind of like, very much, I'm not talking to white people about race. I'm not, you know, allies with the white people, not all white people, but you know what I mean? Like, this demographic of white people. I'm not allies with them. I'm not talking to them. They don't need to be a part of my revolution, blah, 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 blah. And my friend kind of was very much like, well, no, you have to engage with them. You have to build class solidarity. You have to make them understand. You have to raise class consciousness and all of these things, and political consciousness in these people. And I think what I realize is that she's actually right. Like, you have to. You have to. You can't avoid having those conversations with people. And I get, and I get the justification of the stance of not being engaged, not engaging in that, and kind of preserving yourself and your well-being and your peace and your sanity and all of these things. And even politically, kind of not engaging on a certain level, right? Because it will always start off as a bad faith conversation, always. And I understand that. But I think that you cannot have like the global, like, you know, socialist revolution unless like the entire underclass is a part of it. And that includes those demographics of people who are like at the minute going against us, basically. And now that doesn't mean that everyone has to do it. I think that this is where, and again, this is kind of where my Marxist principles come into it, where it's like, these things take organized actions. You can't just kind of act on a whim. You have to organize accordingly. And within that scope, there needs to be people who can have those dialogues. There needs to be like education leaders, like political leaders who can build those bridges, build those relationships, raise like, you know, racial class consciousness and racial class solidarity. There are some people who can't do it. For example, me, that will never be me. That will never in my life be me. And that's not the role that I would play, you know, in trying to build a better life for everyone around the world. But there will be people who can, and it's important. You actually can't avoid it, because if you think about the fact that these are people who sincerely believe what they're saying, and actually a lot of their beliefs and a lot of their positions comes in itself from a place of deprivation and a place of abandonment and a place of neglect. You know, they have been institutionally abandoned by their governments. A lot of these people are working class. You know, a lot of them have, like I said, they're not being looked after. They have qualms, they have grievances, and they're channeling it into the wrong way, you know? So I think that they need to be met with a listening ear, and they need to be course corrected. And you can't do that unless you're having like genuine, earnest dialogue. And there will be people who are equipped to do that, and there will be people who are not. So
I suppose it's a case as well as, do you think that it's the job of non-white people to do that, or should it fall solely on white allies?
I think it's a mix. I think it's not like a multi-factor thing. I think that it will take a number of things on a number of fronts to kind of tackle this properly at the root, is what I think. Because a white person absolutely has to advocate, but they can't advocate truly and sincerely because they can't speak to an experience that they don't have, you know? So,
yeah. I think that's sort of similar to the way that I was thinking about it, because I agree with that there's absolutely no obligation for people of colour to have to engage with, educate these people. Like you say, it's all about preserving your own like mental health sanity. Like, you shouldn't have to go out of your way to do that just because of the way how fucked up society is. At the other side of things, though, I do feel that like not doing anything or just being like, it's their problem,
because it's everyone's problem. Like, you can't avoid this. Like, you can't just like kind of, you can't take a moral high ground and expect that this will be fixed, right? You can't. This is something that needs to be tackled head on. And you can absolutely take the position that none of us should engage, we should just keep ourselves to ourselves. But what that means is ultimately resigning to a future where this continues, because it's not going to change without direct intervention.
Yeah, 100%. I think as well, ultimately, like we're saying, it comes down to education, right? And I think this is another key example of how the current state of the education system is clearly failing people.
I think it's education. I think it's state welfare more than education. I think on a most fundamental level, people have to have their needs met. And actually, the reason that they're out on the streets is because their needs are not met. Because they are, as I said, institutionally neglected, institutionally abandoned. You know, they are very much the underclass. And if they don't have their basic needs met, they're going to always look for someone to blame. You know, not saying that would solve the problem entirely, but I think that has to be the departure point.
I suppose there are some people that would say, though, look, like, I know plenty of people that they're struggling to make ends meet. They're white working class. And they're not out there being a dickhead.
No, absolutely. I'm not making this exclusively a class issue where I'm like, because obviously we know that the most racist in society kind of are the upper class people who have the power to kind of enact this on an institutional level. But I'm saying this kind of action, right? This kind of civil unrest, this kind of civil dissent, largely does come from working class people. And actually what it is like misdirected anger, because as I keep saying, they are institutionally neglected. And I think to tackle this specific problem, you have to make sure that these people's basic needs are met, and then see how much of them really believe that, you know, migrants are this, that and the other.
It is just a case of, how do you do that? How do you actually get people to actually sit down, listen with an open mind as well, because I think there's people that would maybe listen, but then they'd be like, well, no,
I think stubborn. You have to do out all fronts. I think firstly it starts with like state welfare, and then I think it has to be interventions in schools, in youth clubs, in kind of like political leaders, influencers, like social media leaders, like people like Tommy Robinson and Katie Hopkins and this, that and the other. Like, it needs to be on all fronts, I think.
That's the thing, though, when it comes to some of these far-right influencers, essentially, that's their income. Like, that's their job.
Right. So this is lucrative.
Yeah, I don't even know whether half them actually believe what they're saying. I think sometimes they're just saying it because they know that they rouse people.
Or they're emphasising, they emphasise and kind of talking points, certain rhetorics and dialogues, because they know that it will, like, rage bait people and that's a nice tidy paycheck for them.
It's just so frustrating, because it's yet another thing that, like, government should be at. And, like, look, like, you're seeing what's happening, right? You're seeing what's happening every single week, and yet your response is to come out and say, well, I have a Union Jack flag in my own.
Fuck off. Keir Starmer, have you seen he's going to recognise Palestinians? Sorry, segue, but have you seen he's going to recognise Palestinian statehood this weekend, apparently? Well, we know, in my opinion, he's fleeing from those genocide charges. That's what he is. He's backtracking, he's covering his tracks.
Also, what we've seen that, again, is just worrying about, like, the state that we're living in. Have you seen how they've been clamping down so much on people that have been protesting during Trump's visit? And I don't mean necessarily in terms of people with placards and whatever. I mean in terms of these projected images. So, do you know the Instagram led by donkeys? So they're basically a group, anti-establishment group, basically. Mm-hmm. And they have been responsible, I think it was maybe the first night of Trump's visit, they projected a massive image of him with Jeffrey Epstein onto Windsor Castle.
Right.
Which obviously they're pointing out at how there's so much speculation about Donald Trump's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, and we know that there's these files that the Trump administration has hold of that part of them getting elected into power, they said that they were going to release to the public, and they haven't done that. So it's all a case of, well, what's actually in those files? Like, why are you so afraid to, if you've got nothing to hide, then just... So it's looking quite sus, basically. So,
very dubious. I mean, there's so much pointing to a very suspicious relationship and activity there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not surprising when you consider his track record anyway. I still can't believe that he's literally, like, after the whole grabbing by the pussy thing... Like, literally still...
He's been convicted of, like, sexual... What is it? Sexual harassment or sexual what something. And he's still fucking the president of arguably the most powerful state in the world.
But, yeah, they made that projection onto Windsor Castle. And they've actually been arrested... on suspicion of malicious communications.
I want to say something here. So you see these like far right protests, right? And also more significantly, I know we're probably going to talk about this, but Charlie Kirk, right? Mm. Just to kind of like add a bit of context, a lot of the reaction and the response to his death has been that a lot of the reaction and the response to his death has been like, there's a crisis in free speech, right? Like, regardless of what Charlie says, he should be able to say it because he should be entitled to free speech. And it's like, how do you think that these far-right protesters and people like Charlie Kirk should be able to have free speech, and then other people who are expressing dissent in other ways for other things shouldn't? Like, how is there such a clear standard there? And especially we've seen it a lot in this country where they're like, these protesters are being painted in a really negative light. They're just expressing their right to, freedom of speech, and they should be able to do that, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, okay, fine, let's say they are able to do that. You know, notwithstanding the fact that there is a huge incitement to hatred that we have seen ultimately culminate in various vicious attacks against minorities, but fine, let's just say it's all to do with freedom of speech. Why are they entitled to that and then other people aren't? Palestine Action aren't,
literally
led by donkeys aren't. Like, why?
When you look at the comparison of, because arguably that's been the other big protests or series of protests that have been happening recently, have been Palestine Action ones. When you look at the number of people that have been arrested simply for holding a sign at those compared to the protests.
And that is an extreme as well. That is extreme. That is not a situation where someone is out here and they've said death to the British state. Like, fine, I get it then. These are fucking elderly OAPs out here holding a sign. Like, that is how fragile human rights have been in this country for anti-establishment protesters. And yet these far-right protesters are not just out here weeks after weeks kind of spouting this like really, really vile, inciting language, but actually getting to a point where they're like battering people. And there's no conversation about squandering their freedoms. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, look, like, we've given, like, what, three examples of really serious, horrific attacks on people of colour in the UK that have happened within the past couple of weeks. We know why they're happening. We know what's, like, giving people, emboldening people to do that. That should be ringing alarm bells, like, up above. Like, come on, like, we need to stop this before something, like, already the worst, like, of the worst has happened. Like, we need to stop this before it happens again. And yet,
no, but that's allowed to happen because those people should be allowed their freedom of speech. But if anyone else dares protest, then Have you seen in America, like going back to the Charlie Kirk thing, Jimmy Kimmel, which is like an absolute flipping like staple of like American television, like a long running established staple of American television, has been indefinitely taken off the air because he made a joke about, not even a joke about Charlie. Did you see the video?
I saw a quote of it.
So it wasn't even a joke about Charlie Kirk dying. It was a joke about the fact that when Trump, because obviously like Trump says like they were good friends or whatever, when Trump was asked about his death and like how he's grieving and stuff, he just answered talking about, oh, I can't remember what it was, like building something, like just didn't really say much or show much like grief or remorse or upset at the fact that he's dead. And Jimmy Kimmel like made a joke about this, and ultimately the joke was about Donald Trump, not about Charlie Kirk. And still, like, kind of that was so threatening to them that they've literally taken his show off indefinitely. So I'm like, is that not an attack on freedom of speech? Like, you're up, you're here holding the right to freedom of speech in the wake of Charlie Kirk's death, and yet at the same time simultaneously taking away someone else's right to freedom of speech. It's like the level of cognitive dissonance just never ceases to amaze.
It's kind of in a similar way of how like the alleged shooter, it came out that he literally comes from like a Republican family.
Oh my god!
Still
this...
like deny or like. Somehow it's still a problem with the radical left. I don't understand.
This is nonsense. Have you seen the FBI have leaked?
Yeah, I read it and I was like,
this is such nonsense. I am so sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sure we're allowed to say this, but anyone who believes that those are real legitimate texts written by the shooter must not have two brain cells to rub together. I'm so sorry. I've got a bridge to sell you. Is that the phrase?
Bridge to sell you,
like someone's really gullible and you say to them, well, have I got a bridge to sell you?
I don't know if it's the same, but we'll make it.
Well, they're fucking gullible, aren't they?
I think I started reading and I was like, oh, this is interesting, and then by the end of it I was like, wait, what did I just read?
A GCSE drama script by a 16-year-old acting enthusiast. Flipping nonsense.
I feel like surely if that was actually real, am I right in thinking they wouldn't have actually released it? Would they not? Surely there would be reason for them to not actually. I don't know.
Yeah, it's an ongoing investigation.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think they would have. And even if they did, like, I'm so sorry. Like, firstly, who speaks like that? Firstly. Yeah. Secondly, who speaks like that after they've just committed a murder? Thirdly, who goes to the extent of confessing everything, every single detail
of, oh, I left it, my gun here, I did this, I did that, and then, I'm going to do this.
And I was planning to do this, and I was planning to do that, and this is what my next steps are. Who on earth goes to the extent of planning, like, that murder was planned, right? They were prepared because they took a 200-meter shot, right? That takes, like, skill, planning, execution. Why on earth would they now be singing like a canary on a text message knowing that phones can be tapped?
Exactly. I'm just remembering as well how they were like, how long have you been planning for? About a week.
Like,
who would ask that?
Have that conversation. Like, imagine your mate just messages you to be like, I've just fucking killed Charlie Kirk. I'll be like, what the fuck? I wouldn't be there.
The other thing, even the way the friend, they were responding.
Even
yeah.
the friend was behaving like a fucking freak. Like, just odd.
Imagine if it actually is real.
I would eat my own foot. I would actually eat my own foot if that was real, because I cannot believe that it is.
Also, yeah. Surely if that is real, then that friend should be in trouble as well, right?
Yeah.
Surely.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's just so hilarious that they're trying to feed us. Like, they're really trying to make us believe. Like I said, if you believe it, contact me. I've got a bridge to sell you. I actually think there's quite a lot to say. It's a really interesting conversation about, I mean, some people were outright celebrating his death. Some people expressed pleasure. Some people expressed kind of no sympathy or anything like that. And then there is kind of like another demographic of people who are like, it doesn't matter how awful he was or what he said and what he did and how much harm he caused and all of this. You shouldn't be celebrating his death. Like, he was a human being. He was a father. He was a husband. All of these things. And what's your take?
I think personally, I would never wish death upon anyone. I think it's wrong. Even like the most evil of people, like that are alive right now, I don't wish death on them. Obviously, if they were to die and it meant that certain evil things that they were doing stopped, then I would be like indifferent about it. I'd be like, well, right. it's a good thing that that's a good net positive.
It's a utilitarian. View to take. Yeah,
I do think it's wrong to like. It's kind of like how I don't agree in the death penalty, because I'm like, how are we gonna give people? How are we gonna like say it's okay to kill people? When they've killed other people, for example, it's like you're literally just doing the same thing, like you're taking like ultimately God's power into your hands. Like I don't think that's right. But arguing that I should feel any type of way about the fact that someone's died who spent the majority of their life spouting what I believe to be hateful rhetoric. It's not gonna happen.
Right, so this is my thing as well, right? Okay, I am not celebrating death, because for me death isn't like the ultimate punishment. I'm a Muslim, like for me facing God is the ultimate punishment, you know? Like I don't think that death was like the ultimate punishment here. However, this idea, and in that sense, I'm not here like celebrating that, like, oh my God, I actively really wanted him to die. And I really believe that that has absolutely solved the problem. And I'm not invested in that. However, this idea that I should now mourn him, or that I should grieve him, or that I should be able to humanize him in his death, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that I think there was a Christian person talking about this, and they were talking about the Bible, where it's like, you can't change someone's character just because they've died. You can't celebrate someone in death when they lived an undignified life, right? And I do believe that he lived an undignified life. I don't believe he was a good person. I would go as far as saying he was a pretty evil person. He was pretty heinous and horrendous. And he said so many things that incited so much violence and hatred, like on an institutional level, because again, he wasn't a random figure kind of spouting this nonsense. He was very close to the US administration. He had a huge following. He had massive social and therefore political influence, you know, so he really wielded, you know, some degree of power in enacting what I would argue is like institutional violence and, you know, discrimination and marginalization against a number of minorities, you know, black women, Palestinians, Muslims, immigrants, trans people, queer people. Like he was
literally
women. Like he was a pretty fucking heinous person, in my opinion. And in that sense, I don't understand why I would now mischaracterize him in his death and act as though it's a tragedy. I don't believe that it is. I don't believe that it is at all. The only people that I would feel any sympathy for in this situation might be his children.
I feel bad for anyone who is mourning his death. That is a good person.
Innocent party,
which I was like, the only people
in that situation who can be innocent are the children, because they're not old enough to form political views.
But then it's like, even then, it's like, he literally feel bad for the kids, but he's literally gone on record saying that if his daughter was raped, then he wouldn't let her have an abortion if she got pregnant.
This is what I'm saying. He's just such a heinous person that I don't know how anyone is looking at that and thinking like it's a tragedy. Again, not saying that I'm celebrating his death or that I wanted him to die. I had no stakes in that man's lives, but I'm not going to sit here and, like I said, mischaracterize him in his death and act like, oh my God, it's really sad and he didn't deserve this. And it's an attack on freedom of speech. I don't think it is. I think, okay, look, it's not a very helpful precedent, right? I think that a lot of people are taking a very like unnuanced view of this, where they're like, absolutely anything that anyone can say should be enshrined in their freedom to speech. And I don't agree with that. I think there should be some speech that is criminalized, right? Which is hate speech. I think there's a very big difference between freedom of speech and hate speech. And I don't believe that Charlie Kirk had the right to say everything that he said. I think to some degree, some of what he said should have been criminalized because it was hateful and it was an incitement to hatred as well. And in that regard, I don't see his death as this big affront to people's freedom of speech. Also, because I feel like definitely there is an issue in freedom of speech. Definitely there is an issue with gun violence, but he is not the example to point to that. Mm-hmm. You know, recently in America, we have literally seen, like, you know, the students in Colombia when they've been like kind of protesting for Palestine and kind of how they've been treated, and that literally students have been like stripped of citizenship, kicked out of their university courses, abused by the police, you know, imprisoned wrongfully, all of these things. That is something that I would look to and be like, fuck, that is an attack on freedom of speech. You know, there is literally mass shootings in America because of uncontrolled gun violence. That is what I would look to as an example of uncontrolled gun violence, not necessarily his death. And the irony is that literally when he was being killed, he was in the middle of being pro-gun violence, saying that, you know, that he's okay with there being collateral damage if everyone gets the right to, everyone gets to exercise their right to the Second Amendment. And it's like, well, you are your own collateral then, aren't you?
I think there's also something to be said about how there are the people out there that are expecting everyone to be in some kind of mourning about this person that's died. But it's like, if that's the case, then what about all the numbers of people that we see in the news headlines about the people that have died all around the world?
Right.
Due to policies that Charlie Kirk is supporting.
Right.
Are we meant to feel any type of, like, they also, like I said, they just end up being numbers, which is so sad.
Yeah.
And yet you're asking me to feel sorry for this person that literally all they did was spout hate.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I don't think what happened to him was a unique tragedy. I don't think it was I'm so sorry, I've forgotten her name, the Ukrainian refugee, in America. Have you heard about it?
That got stopped. Yeah.
That is something that's, really tragic. You know, that's something that is, that is an unassuming human being. That is just tragic, right? I don't believe what happened to him was a unique tragedy, because it happens all the time to so many people, and they do not get anywhere near enough the same coverage, the same compassion, the same, you know, political kind of empathy for their death, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, I'm not gonna celebrate his death, but I'm not arsed either.
That's the thing. It's like, I agree, like, I'm not gonna ever be like
ding dong the witches.
Yeah, that's the one comes to mind.
Yeah,
we're not gonna be like that, but at the same time, don't expect me to actually
give a fuck anyway. He was a fucking awful person. I'm so sorry. I'm not going to act like he...
Freedom of speech.
Literally. Yeah. I'm not going to act like him dying is he's now a good person, or that I'm so sorry. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
I've just seen the amount of people who I know who don't speak up for any other political issue. All of a sudden, they're so upset about Charlie Kirk's death. And they're I don't even agree with him. But he was a family man. He was a Christian. He challenged people. I'm like, what the fuck rock are you lot living under?
Why is now the time that you choose to actually
care about,
have a voice?
Right. You don't speak up for anything else. But Charlie fucking Kirk is what will get you up in arms. Get a grip.
You think it's because these people kind of see that, that could happen to me. Not that not that I'm saying that anyone is on the same level as him in terms of the thing that he was saying, but it's kind of this is a reflection of a white man who
went around,
and if it can happen to him, then it can happen to anyone.
I honestly think it's just a straight up privileging of white life over other lives. That's literally just what I think. Anyways. Anyway,
anything positive? Come on, there's got to be something.
Well, Verona, I've got a nice thing to say. So my friend Verona's here, and it was her birthday on Monday. It's a few days after mine. And I said to her, what do you want to do for your birthday? What do you want for your birthday? And literally her response was she wants to go to Manchester for her birthday.
That's why
we're here. So big up money. Big up money.
So is that literally the reason why this live episode is happening?
Because Verona wanted to come here for her birthday.
Well done.
So... big up Manny on the map.
On that note, thank you everyone for tuning in this week.
Bye.
We'll see you next time.